Hey, it's Steph Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. Thank you for being one of our listeners in 88 countries around the world. Today, we're speaking with Lily Gilbert, Chief Sustainability Officer at Mandala Club and the founder of the Circular Community Singapore and in the UK. Lily is a sustainability professional and impact investor with over 15 years of experience in the private sector and for NGOs across Europe and Asia. She advises on things like carbon, waste, sourcing strategy, and helps companies to develop their sustainability agenda while embedding it into operations and communicating it with customers. In this episode, we talk about true cost accounting, the challenges and opportunities in feeding a growing global population, why we need to be more optimistic and solution-oriented in the climate conversation, and so much more. Okay, it's time to live wide awake. Well, Lily, thank you for joining us on the Live Wide Awake podcast. I am really looking forward to hearing more about your journey and all the incredible work you're doing. So I would love for you to take us back two decades ago when your sustainability journey started and how you kind of got to where you are now.
Okay, well, thank you. It's lovely to be here on the podcast. I love listening to you, so thank you for having me. Wow, that's quite a big, broad question, and 20 years is a very long time. So I would say at the beginning, it was really about conservation for me. That was my big passion. Yeah, it's a really long time ago. I left school. I worked in conservation as a scuba diver, and it was a very emotional kind of involvement at the start. I loved seeing nature at its best. It made me sad to see the damage that had been done. I really kind of found it important to be working on trying to protect that. And then fast forward a few years, I went into the city. I started working as a management consultant, but never kind of forgot that passion. And so ended up back, I took a client in the Galapagos Islands to work on what I thought would be conservation. But then actually what happened in practice when I got there, it wasn't just conservation work. I got to see kind of firsthand how protecting an ecosystem, protecting the environment has to be done in concert with the people who live there and the economy that is there, what it is supporting, and nature and biodiversity. Their systems and biodiverse systems have nature and ecological systems have ecological services, and they are resources, basically, that people use. And so for me, sustainability came, it was this idea of sustainable development, as opposed to a kind of pure idea of conservation, which is looking at nature and saying, let's leave that pristine and not touch it and have it like that forever. It's saying, no, actually, let's be practical here. We have billions of people on the planet who live in nature, and it's all about the two coexisting together in a way that is good for both people and planet and that works over time.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting distinction and something that I think is so important, because we can't help the planet without helping people. It's so deeply intertwined. So I really love that you had that sort of epiphany, I guess, like so early on. And so after that, like, where did that journey then take you from there? So, and because I know now you're obviously Chief Sustainability Officer at Mandala here in Singapore. So I would love to hear how that, you know, kind of then transpired.
I have done all sorts of things is the kind of short answer to that. It's taken me from the UK to Geneva in Switzerland, and now I'm here in Singapore. And over that time, I have worked in companies. I've worked as a consultant. I've had my own business. So there's been a real breadth and of the kind of work I've done, and has really been cross industry, which is, I think, what kind of brings me the experience that I have now to really build out a sustainability team in a company like Mandala. But I've worked in the private sector. I have had clients who are from property, F&B, hospitality, tourism, who are looking at sustainability and would like to sort of supercharge that. I've also worked in the nonprofit sector. I spent a few years working for the Better Cotton Initiative. And what we were doing there was developing a standard for cotton that is grown in a more sustainable way for people, for planet, but also that's economically beneficial. And it's very different working in the private sector to the public sector, and the way you work, what you achieve, kind of what works is it's very variable. And then I kind of winded up back in the private sector, and I had my own company, which was, it was a for-profit company, but it had a very social and environmental ethos around it. So, and that was all about, that was a circular economy company, really. It was a lifestyle brand creating products and services to enable people to live more sustainably.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And so with all of this experience, you know, from nonprofit to corporate to, you know, starting having your own social enterprise, what do you sort of see as like the key levers for when it comes from a business perspective on how people can develop their sustainability agendas and where they should really be focusing their attention? Because it can be quite overwhelming, but we want to really focus and double down on the pieces that have impact. So yeah, what do you kind of advise in that capacity?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really huge question and there isn't a simple answer. And I what I would say is it just totally depends on the company and the business and where you're operating, what you're doing. So, of course, if you just look at everything that's going on, all the problems, all the potential things that you could get involved in as a company, you're going to be immediately overwhelmed. And where I will always start, whether I'm just talking to somebody about kind of how they live at home or whether I'm talking to a company who wants to do a whole strategic sustainability analysis, I would always just go back to the basics and just say, well, what do we do? What do we make? What do we sell? Who are our customers? And understanding and quantifying through that activity, what is the impact that we have? What are the potential kind of negative impacts that us doing business has environmentally, socially? And then also, where do we do good? Or where is there an opportunity to do good if we could deploy finance doing something that aligns with what our business does, which also has a huge beneficial impact in terms of social or environmental issues, then you know, what are those? And the answer is different depending on the company, the country, the size of the company, where it is in its journey. So unfortunately, there's just not one answer, but I could maybe give you some examples if that's an interesting way to answer this. So I worked with a property company who, again, it was just like, oh my gosh, we have no idea. We have no idea what we're bad at, what we're good at. And so we started with the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. So there are 17 of those. They cover 17 different sort of aspirations, and together they create a framework that we can follow that will enable a more sustainable future. And that really does cover everything from sort of climate change and water use and biodiversity to social aspects like poverty and equality. And we looked at them all and we looked at how this property business operated, which was basically building businesses, commercial buildings, and looked at kind of how they were doing that from start to finish and how that either was supportive or created risks around some of the different SDGs. And there's a lot of work that goes into that, but the people who know it best are the people who run these businesses. So it's not, once you kind of get into it and you've got a way of thinking about it and maybe a consultant helping you or just an approach, you'll find that out of that come the insights because you know your business. And so definitely you need to highlight the problems. And then from that, you need to kind of go, well, what are we going to work at? Like the big problems, we need to address those. There might be some problems which really aren't that bad that in totality, it's just not worth spending the time on at the beginning or the money on at the beginning. So and you can leave those aside and then sort of going, well, now how, as well as just making sure we're not doing bad, how can we do good? And I think the best case studies of that are when the good that you're trying to do aligns with what the business does at its core. And when you're trying to do something that's just kind of tacked on the side, it can be good. Of course it is. It's always good to donate money to charity or go and do a beach cleanup. But if it isn't core to what you're, and aligned with what your business does, it's not going to evolve and magnify as it can do if it's actually embedded into what you do. So that there's a really nice nuance there. And again, it's not hard to do. You just have to kind of get into the thinking about what do we do as a business, and then you'll start to draw out where you can do those things better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think having that integrated approach is so critical. And that's really where, yeah, they can be very successful. So let's now talk a little bit about like your work with Mandala, the members club in Singapore, and how you've been sort of spearheading the sustainability there. And yeah, as a perfect case study of how you've aligned that with what the business actually does.
Oh, well, thank you. I think so too. When I started working with Mandala, which was over 3 years ago now, it was very obvious what needed to be done. And that was basically getting our house in order. We have this beautiful heritage building in Tanjong Pagar. It has a carbon footprint. We are producing waste through each day, the food that is delivered that's turned into meals, etc. And I like to kind of call this the obvious part of what we do. And I don't need to spend much time explaining it because I think you and your listeners kind of know, you know, you need to measure your carbon footprint. You need to put in place initiatives to reduce the energy consumption. You need to look at renewable energy. You need to measure your waste. You need to optimize for that, reduce single use packaging, and et cetera, et cetera. And very quickly, we kind of had a framework for that that we have been embedding. And I'm not saying we're at the end of that journey, but we're on it. And to me, I'm happy with that. We are doing what we should do to operate as a responsible business. But the second part of what I do at Mandala is what I think is so impactful. And the reason I think it's so powerful is because it aligns with what Mandala is as a business, which is a community builder, basically. It's a community of people. We bring together people in this fabulous space and we provide an arena with events and beautiful spaces to be for them to sort of live their best lives and to connect with people, to learn things, to feel inspired, to feel well, to feel positive, to bring that together in kind of a place where people want to be. And that's community building. And so what I've done on the sustainability side is gone, well, you know what? Our real power will come from inspiring a whole community about sustainability, like why it matters, what we can do about it, positive, optimistic ways to address it, linking them up with the right kind of people who can help them take that into their workplace or take them to their home or to the school their kids go to. And it's really got legs. People are incredibly interested, incredibly engaged. We've got this great series of talks going on. People are asking for more. So we kind of have these spin-offs coming out of it, like lunches with different people who were at talks. And it's really kind of what Mandala is as a business. And so when I think about how I can affect change in the sustainability arena, I do it through community building.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think it's such a important part and being able to integrate that into the touch points of the club and being able to foster that level of community for those that are interested and those that are, you know, starting to explore this topic, I think is, yeah, providing a lot of touch points for that. So let's talk a little bit about that event series because it's called The Elephant in the Room, which I think is great. Yes. And just so simple and gets to the point. So I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about some of those elephants. So a recent one, for example, tackled about how we can sustainably feed a rapidly growing global population, which is, it's a big concern, you know? And so I would love to hear what some of the insights were shared for that topic.
It was an amazing discussion, Steph. We spoke for an hour, about 40 people. The conversation kept flowing. We had to pull it to a close, but it's an incredibly interesting topic. And it's a big issue just to sort of describe in brief, food security, we're talking about how do we produce, consume and dispose of food globally. And doing that in the right way will ensure food security, i.e. that all people, wherever they live, have access to enough healthy food to enable them to live their best life. So not just to survive, but actually to live and to thrive. And we absolutely don't have that today. And not only do we not have it, the problem is just growing. So we produce a huge amount of food. I think we produce something like 300 times as much food as we did in the 80s. And population has not grown that much. And yet a third of people globally are overweight or obese. And nearly a million people went hungry in 2022. So we're producing all this food, but it's not fit for purpose. It's not getting to people in the right way. We waste nearly 40% of the food we make, either on the farm or as it's being transported or as it's being prepared or in the home or you know, afterwards. So we produce this food, we waste it, and we don't feed people effectively. And that problem today is only going to grow as population grows. And kind of the reason for this is the way that we produce food doesn't take into account externalities, basically. Food production is a third of global greenhouse gas emissions. It's contributed to a 70% loss in biodiversity since the 70s. I think 70% of land worldwide is used for food production. You can't just use more land to make more food as the population grows. We don't have any more. We need that for urban areas. So the problem, if you think today is big, imagine what it will be in the decades to come. And what the solutions need to be multifaceted. So we need to first of all agree that the food system that we have at the moment is not working. And one reason for that is that it doesn't take into account, when you produce food and you price food, you don't take into account the carbon emissions. So if you have a locally produced vegetable and then one that's been imported, fine, the one that's been imported, there will be a cost of transport taken into account. But if the place where it was grown, the cost of labor is cheaper, that's actually irrelevant, because the food, when it arrives, even when you add on a transportation cost, is still going to be less. So the consumer's going to choose that one. But what it doesn't take into account is that because it was imported, it has more carbon emissions, or it might have more carbon emissions. It's likely to. And why does that matter? Well, it means that we are making choices about the food we eat without knowing the full picture. And I'm not just talking about the environmental impact of the food, but also the social impact. Like, who grew that food and where, and what happened to them? What is the, and you can actually quantify like a financial cost of that, of what's happening in the supply chain. And not taking all those things into account, we are making choices about the food that we eat that means that it's not sustainable and also may not even be healthy for us.
Yeah, which is such a massive topic and so fascinating to think about. And so I guess what were some of like the takeaways, like how can we actually address this as a global problem? Did you even manage to get to that point? Because obviously 1 hour is a lot, but also, you know, you could talk about it for hours more. So were there any sort of like key takeaways about what needs to happen or where the focus could be or what we can also do, you know, when we're purchasing food or engaging?
Yeah, I think there's, if you were sort of to say, there are roughly kind of two ways. There are things that the food industry can do. So that's the growers, the producers of the food. There were lots of interesting tech solutions that we discussed. So this is up the supply chain. It's nothing to do with you or me when we're choosing what to buy. But the food companies can optimize the way that they're growing. There's clever tech and traditional tech actually that's around improving yields, reducing the need for pesticides and water, and actually going all the way into really quite disruptive tech, like growing meat cultured in a lab rather than using an animal that needs land, or, as you know, creating plant-based proteins. This is all kind of disruptive tech, basically aimed at trying to create the food that we want to eat in a way that doesn't require the same number of resources. So that's kind of the tech angle, and that really sits up with the food producers. But there's also a role there of government and around regulation, which can enable, divert finance towards all of these solutions that we need to create more and better food. And then finally, we talked about at a consumer level, the choices that we can make, and that the choices of the food that we eat are actually really important. And when you add it all up and you start to talk to friends about it, or you go to your office and say, I don't want this food, can we talk about sourcing a different kind of more sustainable food? It starts to add up, and that begins with education and awareness. So our habits have kind of moved, let's say they've shifted towards preferentially choosing convenience food, stuff that we don't make ourselves from scratch, stuff that might have additives that's not good for our body, stuff that might have packaging in, that also has an environmental impact. I mean, we did talk about this, and this is maybe a little bit, a few years in the future, but true cost accounting was a big thing which came up. So true cost accounting is an amazing tool that you can use to quantify the true financial, environmental, social cost of a product. So it's really like looking at the life cycle of a product, how it was made, transported, and then all the impacts that it had. There were carbon emissions there, right, that you don't know what they are. That's all quantified. And then instead of having a banana for 45 cents, you've got a banana maybe for 90 cents, taking into account all of that. And that if you were to, as a government or as a global kind of multinational initiative, and say, right, we're going to make all our food, we're going to make producers price it at their true cost, then actually you would start to see consumers making different decisions, because they wouldn't be able to not pay for the other impacts of the food because of the way it was grown.
Yeah.
There's actually a supermarket in the Netherlands which does that. So you go around the supermarket and they've got all the food and they've got the price, which is the regular price. And then next to it, they've got the true cost price. So they've done all the homework to figure out that. And then you do all your shopping, you go to the till and you can decide whether you want to pay the market price or whether you want to pay the true price. And that's up to you. And I just think it's a lovely idea for raising awareness, but without forcing the cost onto the consumer, because we didn't get onto this yet, but there's this huge angle of this ethical angle that food needs to be affordable for, like, real food security comes when everybody in the world has access to affordable food. And that if you say, well, you know what, meat, the production of meat contributes to a huge percentage of global greenhouse gas emissions, let's just make meat more expensive, you know, then you are effectively cutting people out of the market for it, when protein may be when everybody needs and has a right to eat protein, a certain amount of protein. So it's difficult when you start to talk about price. It has to be talked about differently depending on which consumers you're talking about, developed countries, developing countries. But I really like the approach of this supermarket in the Netherlands, because they kind of educate about that without forcing it.
Yeah, and I think that's the pricing and the money side of things is just really, like, the more that I've been talking about money in the last, like, year, I think in the case of sustainability, the more I'm realizing that everything is connected to money. And when we price things differently, when we move the money, when we subsidize different things, like, it's really just so much with the money.
And so, we live in a capitalist world and our economies are structured that way. It is a problem, but it's also that there lies your solution. You know, one of your questions was about how do you ensure sustainable growth, right?
Well, yeah, because I mean, this is so deeply connected. So if we want to invest in impact and we want to invest in sustainability, how is that even possible in a world that's geared towards returns and this capitalist markets that we're living in? I mean, how can we actually shift that? Because that is what we're up against, really. It's the entire capitalist system.
Yes, yes. Yes, and David Attenborough talks very eloquently about that in his book. It is an elephant-sized question, actually. And again, there's ethical elements to it. You know, I think ultimately for growth to be truly sustainable, it has to be able to continue as it is over time. And it's irrefutable now that the way that we've been growing has not been taking into account and quantifying environmental impact and social impacts, negative impacts I'm talking about. And that cannot continue in perpetuity, because you just simply have resources running out, or a world that is, because of climate change, more expensive to live in. And I think when the penny drops with that, you don't really kind of go back from that way of thinking. You know, once you realize that, you know, it's not a kind of opinion anymore. It's just the way it is. And so then it really has to be a multifaceted solution. There's a role of regulators and a role of consumers and a role of companies and brands within the economy. And they all kind of have to move in concert, because you're not going to have a government setting regulation that is so onerous that the companies in their economy can't function anymore or become uncompetitive when you have free trade. You're not going to have companies go, do you know what, we're just going to make a stand now. You're not going to have many companies that maybe just take out half their product line or double their pricing to make it true cost if they don't think consumers will follow. And consumers have this incredible power to influence the brands and the companies and regulators as their voters. But it all has to kind of happen together.
Yeah, no, it's so deeply entwined. And I want to talk about that a little bit more, because I think the consumers have such a big piece in it. And I think we forget the power that we have with our wallets and blah, blah, blah. Like, everyone kind of knows, but then are we really activating it? And in the last 6 months, I've been told multiple times by people in the media that they're fatigued by the sustainability conversation, which I obviously then thought about and was like, okay, well, if they're fatigued with it, that means that audiences are not reading it, because if audiences are reading these stories, then they wouldn't be fatigued about it and they would be talking about it all the time. So I was really shocked, and I haven't been able to shake it from the back of my head, because if people are over sustainability stories, like, what chance do we have to continue to remind people, onboard the masses? And yeah, I know you've obviously worked a lot in sustainable comms and communities and that type of thing. So what is your take on this?
Yeah, that's a very shocking thing to hear. I've heard it too, but I wouldn't say it's across the board. I've got Mandala members who are clamoring for more content on sustainability, who say, I need to learn more about this, please give me more. I'd also say on a corporate level, and talking to companies, I don't hear fatigue. I hear the opposite. I hear them going, we are bringing this into the way we do business, tell us how, or, you know, we want to talk to you about it. I would say it's kind of the opposite. That's gathering momentum. But I do echo that. I do think a lot of readers, people, audiences have, there's been a sort of saturation of content on sustainability. And I wonder if that's a little bit to do with the type of content. A lot of sustainability content is scary and scaremongering. And whenever there's a COP conference or a new report from the IPCC on climate change data, the press grab out a few highlights and talk about kind of how we failed at this and how this isn't working. It's really hard to read. And as a consumer, it's also, you feel completely powerless. And I think there's definitely room for sustainability content that's more optimistic and that's more sort of solutions based and practical. And I don't see that going away. I mean, this is the story of our time. This is what's going on. This is the decade that matters. So it's still will be there. I mean, you could say maybe, I mean, the fatigue, boredom, I don't know what, saturation, is that the word? Maybe that is just what happens when a new issue becomes business as usual. Like 20 years ago, health and safety, it was not a thing in the way you ran your business or your building or school or whatever. And everyone suddenly had to get on board and figure out what that was and what they were going to do to comply with these new regulations on it. And now health and safety is just a completely boring thing that you don't even think about when you're setting up a company, you just do. And sustainability is maybe kind of going through that shift.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting perspective, actually. And I'm going to ponder on that some more, because I am trying to really deeply understand this. Because yes, of course, we can talk about positive stories and optimistic and solutions, but do people actually read those stories? I actually don't know. So I need to go back and speak more to my media friends to understand as well. Like, are those optimistic solution-based stories working? And are people reading those as well?
Does it come down to kind of what are we trying to achieve with them? Like, why do we want people to read articles, and what do we want them to kind of go and do as a result? Is it that we want them to feel a certain way, to go and act, to go and shop a different way?
I think it's a lack of action from consumers that troubles me. You know, obviously I'm very much in the consumer space, and that's the part that I think troubles me, because as we've discussed in this conversation, it always comes up, there's three parts to this story. There's three parts to the action that needs to happen. There's government, there's industry, and there's consumers. And I just feel like, as you know, you've also alluded to, and everyone does, the consumers aren't really holding their weight right now in this delicate triangle that we're navigating through. Government will, you know, has to do the regulation. Industry will follow and do what they need to do. But without this extra pressure from consumers on the government and on industry, are we really going to see the shifts move faster? No, that is a reality. So what is it, you know, so that's where I, you know, the conundrum is in my mind, because I'm like, okay, we need more climate action. We need more action in general, and consumers making different choices and demanding different things. And yet people get so comfortable and they just want the status quo and, you know, for life to go on the way it is. But we have a very rude awakening coming, and it's already here in lots of places. So anyway, yeah, that's what kind of keeps me up at night.
Well, I mean, you're completely right. It's true. We can't just carry bumbling along as we are. I think being generous, I would say, think about what's going on for consumers at the moment. There are many more problems than climate change and sustainability. There is inequality, and there's poverty, there's hunger, there's anxiety, there's rising mental health issues, there's physical health issues. And adding sustainability as like another kind of thing on the to-do list that you've got to do better, otherwise this is yet another way that you're failing to match the perfect lives being shown to you on Instagram, is just depressing. And I can see why you would eventually just switch off and just go, you know what, I just don't have time or capacity to also be worrying about this or making different decisions about this. And, you know, maybe the sustainability content that's really going to galvanize consumers to do what we need them to do, as you were just describing, is the kind of content that inspires them to and shows them how a sustainable life is actually a better life, full stop. And yeah, being that, and part of that, it's not just what's your carbon footprint and are you using single-use plastic? It's so much more than that. It's how healthy are you? What are you eating? How is your mental health? How much time are you getting out in nature rather than on a screen? From all of that flows a general feeling of positivity and well-being. And that just totally aligns with what we're trying to do at the big scale in the economy with the regulations and in these companies. We're trying to do business and create a world that is healthy for us and the planet. And it actually all aligns. Going back to what I was saying earlier about how do companies bring sustainability into the way they operate, think about what you do as a company and align your sustainability with that, because that's just going to make it easy.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to do the same with the consumers.
No, absolutely. I think it's so true. And this is something I have been thinking about a lot recently as well, is what we really need is the status quo, or, you know, companies who are very solution oriented, are doing amazing things and have figured out how to do it at a competitive price. Then hopefully it's the no-brainer decision. You know, when you have incredible clothes or healthy food or whatever, you know, insert here, and that thing is good for you and the planet and it's at a competitive price. Well, that's when, yeah, hopefully then it's the no-brainer decision, and that everything then feeds into that and supplies into that. But mm-hmm. I think we're sort of still in an awkward transition phase where we're not there yet. And there are some incredible companies coming up, and we just, you know, need to support them as much as possible, for at least those that have the capacity to make a different choice based on price or, you know, like the time to research and yada, yada. Because yeah, when we can support and those companies end up thriving, then when these regulations catch up and when industry catches up, they will be surviving because they have figured out how to do it at a competitive price. So anyway, yeah, big long rambles, but
I totally agree with you. And if they do that, they are sustainable financially as well as all of the other ways that we're talking about sustainability.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you think about the word sustainability, it's nothing to do with the environment or social issues, is it? It's just literally, can this continue?
Yeah, exactly. Can it continue? And I think a big part of that is obviously, you know, you've been in this space for a long time and you did allude to it a little bit. The mental health piece and the well-being piece is so important. It can be such a roller coaster of an emotion, eco-anxiety, joy, sadness. So how do you sort of handle the waves as they come? Because, you know, it's not like they come all at once. They come over the trajectory of time and engagement in this space.
I just don't know if I have a good answer for this, Steph. I think you totally...
That's right, because really it's hard. You don't have to.
You just hit the nail on the head with kind of the problem. And of course, with that comes increasing or decreasing kind of optimism and energy. This is maybe a little bit going off topic a little bit, but when I became a mother, one of the best bits of advice I got was from my cousin, Fran. And she said, nothing is forever. Just remember, nothing is forever. And it's a great piece of advice. Anyone who's had a little baby in the house for the first time, and you just cannot believe what's happening. And everything seems like the be all and end all. And it isn't. Everything passes, whether they've got colic or they're waking up at 4:30 in the morning or whatever's going on, it does pass. And just having, you don't know how, you don't know when, but knowing that it will, and that you'll move on, just makes you able to get on with your day and make a cup of coffee and you shrug your shoulders and feel okay again. And I think it's just a good lesson in general. And maybe also applicable here, that I might at sometimes just be feeling on top of the world. We've had an amazing event at Mandala. Member feedback's wonderful. We've got all this energy going on, and there's a real kind of sense of optimism and positivity. And then there are other times when it's just all feels like, yeah, you get a new report comes, the latest COP, there's bad news from the States, and you just go, oh, this is just, how are we going to get there? And, you know, perhaps just sort of not being buffeted by the daily ups and downs, but just having your vision and your passion, really, and going, I will just stay on that road, and the path will become clear.
Mm, no, thank you. I think that's a good refresh and reminder that nothing is forever, and it will always evolve into something, whether good or bad. At least things are constantly moving. That is the one constant in life, is that it is always going to move and shift. And so how do you think we can live wide awake?
So I thought you were going to ask me this. My answer to this is around health. I think if we are healthy in ourselves, if we are eating wonderful food, we are exercising, we're moving our bodies, and we're sleeping, we will feel good. And from a healthy body comes a healthy mind. And from a healthy, happy mind comes all of the things that we need to tackle this huge, huge issue of today, of sustainability. We need optimism. We need ideas. We need solutions. And you are best placed to deliver those when you feel great. And so I'm not going to use the word selfish, it annoys me, but putting yourself first and prioritizing getting to bed, eating well, enjoying yourself, turning off your screen, going out for a run, just do all that. It makes you feel great. And actually, it's the best way you can be. And I think that's actually a really nice way to define kind of how you should approach your best sustainable life. Start with yourself, start by being really, really healthy.
Oh, that's so fantastic and beautiful. And I love it. Healthy body, healthy mind, then you can just do so much more, you know, to help others and help the planet to stay healthy. So beautiful. Well, Lily, thank you so much. This has been such a fun conversation. And yeah, really appreciate you and this conversation. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I always love talking to you, and it's an honor to be on the podcast that I've always loved.
Thank you. Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Lily. Firstly, a sustainable life is a better life, full stop. Secondly, sustainable food production and feeding a global population are major challenges that require multifaceted solutions. Thirdly, nothing is forever. Whatever is going on, it will pass, things will shift and change, and it will happen faster than you think. I'm curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steph L. Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.